Hechel Menachem presents A Tale of Two Souls, an ongoing lecture series on the Tanya by Rabbi Yosef Yitzchak Jacobson. This is recording number 83 in the series entitled The Art of Love, Part 1, Learning How to Love Other People. This class was recorded live at Hechel Menachem, Brooklyn, New York, on the 12th of Tevis, 5760.
Good evening. We're about to embark on the path of Tanya chapter 32, Perek Lamed Beis. Rebbe used to often say that this chapter constitutes the lev, Lamed Beis, the lev, the heart of the whole Sefer HaTanya, because it is a chapter dedicated to the art of love, as is the title of this evening's class. So it's the chapter of the heart, of the Jewish heart. And what the heart does for the rest of the body, that's what this chapter of Tanya is for the rest of Tanya, as we shall see as we go along. It's interesting that in the first editions of Tanya, this chapter did not exist. You know, the Alter Rebbe wrote the Tanya for 20 years intermittently. I mentioned numerous times. And concluding chapters, he would allow them to be copied, and the manuscript would be copied, one copy from another copy from another copy, and dispersed among the Hasidim and among the Jews living at the time. Finally, after many, many years, the Alter Rebbe consented and allowed the manuscripts to be published. It was for two primary reasons. A, then you didn't have copy machines, not like today, so the copies were done by hand. One manuscript, one copy from another copy, and from another copy, a lot of errors fell into the text. Besides that, due to the tragic dispute that existed at the time between the Mesnagdim and the Chassidim, there were certain powerful opponents of the Alter Rebbe and of Chassidus who intentionally inserted powerful errors that were may have seemed very small but were very significant as far as Jewish theology and spirituality is concerned. And then they took out the text of Tanya and they said, you see what the leader of Chassidus, Reb Shneur Zalman of Liadi, believes, you see what his perspective is. So finally, the Alter Rebbe agreed to publish the Tanya, and then he reviewed all the manuscripts once again, and he transmitted it for publication. And then he added chapter 32. So in 1980, they published for the first time a book called the Mahadura Kama of Tanya, the first edition of Tanya, based on the manuscripts that existed prior to the printing of the first printing of the Tanya, was in 1796, Tavkuf Nun Zayin. But for many years before the Tanya was spread, as mentioned in manuscript before. So they printed a book from that sefer. So there's two chapters missing. They printed a sefer from those manuscripts. So there's two chapters missing. Chapter 30 and chapter 32. In the original edition of Tanya, from chapter 29, we go to the present chapter 31, and from the present 31, we go to 33. Both of these chapters, interestingly, deal with the Alter Rebbe's social approach, with the social approach of Chassidus, of how to deal with other people. Perek Lamed talks about the art of not being judgmental towards other people, and how to really get along with people that we feel are inferior to us. And chapter 32 talks about the art of love. And both of these chapters were inserted in the final edition. And thus, indeed, the Alter Rebbe put this chapter here, alluding at least homiletically to the fact that it's the leif, it's the heart of the sefer. In chapter 31, the Alter Rebbe said that in order for a person to attain true joy, he or she has to learn about his or her soul. We have to learn to celebrate our spirituality, to celebrate our inner divine essence, because that divine consciousness is freed, is liberated through every divine act, through every prayer, through every meaningful deed, through every spiritual thought, through learning Torah and observing mitzvahs. So despite the fact that my physical self, my body and everything associated with it, may be lowly, may even be despicable, my animal soul, my animalistic soul, may as well be repulsive and so forth. And this is all true. And as mentioned at length, one sometimes has to contemplate this lowliness in order to crush the smug ego. Nevertheless, my soul remains precious, holy, beautiful, and sacred. And that is what I cherish. And it's that component in me that I want to embrace and I want to celebrate. And I can always celebrate with my soul because at every moment of my life it can be liberated and expressed. And that's the method to reach real profound joy. So now the Alter Rebbe continues chapter 32. Perek Lamed Beis, Daf Mem Aleph Amed Aleph, or 81. Vihine, now, Ayidei Kiyum HaDvarim Hanal. Through acting on the advice mentioned above, Li Yais Gufay Niv Zevenimas Be'enof, that one should view one's body with scorn and contempt. Rather, he should find joy in the joy of the soul alone. So this is a direct and easy path. Towards fulfilling the mitzvah, that you shall love your fellow as yourself, l'chol nefesh miYisrael, with regard to every single Jew, l'migadol v'ad katan, both great Jews as well as small Jews. Everybody knows the famous mitzvah in Parshas Kedoshim, Perek Yutes, Pasuk Yutches, you should not take revenge or bear a grudge against the children of your nation. You should love your fellow just as you love yourself. I am Hashem. In Teras Koyanim, Amar Rebbe Akiva, Zeklal Gadol B'Teira, this is a fundamental rule of Teira. It's a fundamental rule of Teira. But as one of the great sages of last generation, Reb Shia Likutner, said, it's taka a fundamental rule of Torah, but it's much more difficult to make it a fundamental rule of life. Quite on the contrary, love is a complicated subject. It's a difficult issue. Even to people whom we are expected to love, Certainly, when we talk about loving every single Jew, as the Alter Rebbe emphasizes, l'migadol v'ad katan, great and small alike, the Ramban, on his commentary in Chumash, writes on this pasuk, lo yikabe leva adam sheyev es chaveire ka'avasei es nafshei. The heart of an ordinary man cannot accept the fact that it should love its fellow man as it loves itself. I don't have to elaborate on this point. This is a very difficult thing. Can we ever love anyone like we love ourselves? Can we expect to love other people like we love ourselves? Other Mefarshim as well ask the same question. How does the Torah expect in the man v'ahavta l'recha kamaycha? Chizkuni talks about it, the Malbim talks about it, Paneach Raza talks about it, and many, many other commentators, and many indeed, including the Ramban, interpret this pasuk not literally. It doesn't mean that you should experience a passion of love and affection towards your fellow Jew just as you embrace and you love yourself. Rather, it's more a commandment that relates to our behavior towards our fellow man. We should treat another person in our day-to-day behavior as we treat ourselves. That's a good question. What happens if you hate yourself? We shall see. As we go on, we shall see that. The Rambam, interestingly, the Rambam in Hilchos Deis, where he brings this mitzvah, says, "Mitzvah al kol adam lehayiv es kol echad v'echad miYisrael kegufay." Every person is obligated to love every single Jew just like he loves himself, kegufay. And then the Rambam continues and discusses the implications of this mitzvah. Therefore, the Rambam says, as a consequence of this mitzvah, one must treat and care for his fellow man's honor and for his fellow man's money and income and resources, just as he cares and treats his own honor and his own resources and finances, excuse me. The Alter Rebbe emphasizes, as mentioned, the kol echad ve'echad l'migadol v'ad katan. It's easy, or at least it's easier, to love people when there is a good reason to love them. Great people, spiritual giants, deeply selfless individuals and so forth, or people to whom we are indebted. We owe them something and so forth. In their case, in that case, it's often difficult not to love them. But the true emphasis in this mitzvah is to extend love towards every Jew. Limi gadol v'ad katan. The Gemara, Masechta Yerushalmi, in Talmud Yerushalmi, and Masechta Nedarim, in Perek Tes, Halacha Dala discusses this. The Gemara quotes this pasuk, v'ahavta l'recha kamaycha, and the Gemara says, hey Chavida, how can you indeed accomplish this? So the Yerushalmi gives the following metaphor. That if a person is cutting a piece of meat with one of his arms, and by mistake, instead of cutting the beef, you cut your finger, heaven forbid, would any sane person now say, I am going to take revenge from the other arm, from the other hand, for cutting me? It caused me so much pain. It caused me so much aggravation. Let me now cut that finger. So the Yerushalmi says, no sane person would make that calculation. Why not? Why not? Because that's going to hurt the finger that was cut as well. You're dealing with one structure, with one body. So the Yerushalmi says, this is what the pasuk is saying, v'ahavta l'recha kamaycha, and therefore you shouldn't take revenge or bear grudges, because you're dealing with the same structure and you're painting yourself. In other words, the Yerushalmi is telling us that the other Jew is part of ourselves. In Kabbalah, in Jewish mysticism, this issue is highlighted and elaborated even more. The Arizal, on this pasuk, and Sefer Taimei HaMitzvos, which are part of the writings of the Ari, Reb Chaim Vital transcribes the words of the Arizal, and he says, "V'ahavta l'recha kamaycha, da you should know, ki kol Yisrael soid guf echad shel adam harishon." All the Jews, essentially embody the one body and structure of Adam HaRishon. V'chol echad miYisrael u'eiver prati, and every Jew is one specific organ. And Reb Chaim Vital continues, that is the reason why my teacher of blessed memory, referring to his Rebbe the Arizal, Reb Yitzchak Luria, one of the greatest Kabbalists of Jewish history who lived in the 16th century in Tzfas, that is the reason why my teacher, Zichreina Levracha, is accustomed to say all the confessions every day, Ashamnu, Bagadnu, Gazalnu. He confesses his sins every day, even though he has not committed any of these sins, because the violations, the transgressions, the wrongdoings, the misgivings of another Jew are part and parcel of the Arizal's own structure and own life. If this arm is being cut, if this finger is being cut, if my right finger is being cut, the left finger also suffers from it. And the brain suffers from it, and every other part suffers from it. And essentially what this means is, and we discussed this in chapter 2 of Tanya, Alter Rebbe discusses this at length, that just as there is a body, a physical body, that consists of many limbs and organs and tissue and cells and DNA and compartments and so on and so forth, sinews and vessels and the nerves and so on and so forth, everything that's contained in a body. The same is true, there's also a spiritual organism in the world, symbolized in the structure of Adam HaRishon, a spiritual organism which encompasses all souls of Israel. All the souls comprise one major structure, and each soul is one limb or one tissue or one organ or one bone or one sinew or one vessel of that major structure. So this is the spiritual, mystical explanation for Avos Yisrael. And like everything in Kabbalah, it's alluded to directly in the exoteric dimensions of Yiddishkeit, as mentioned in Talmud Yerushalmi, Masechet Nedar, and Periktas. This is all true and beautiful and interesting. But the question is, to apply it in our day-to-day lives is very difficult. In our feelings, in my immediate sense and approach, you are one person and I am another person. And your concerns and your life is not my life and not my concerns. And we all know that. There is thou and there is I. So even if philosophically we can relate to such an awareness and such an understanding, it's nevertheless difficult to integrate it into our feeling to the extent that we should experience a love. Thus comes the Alter Rebbe in chapter 32 and says that if a person acts and integrates the message he discussed in the earlier chapters, which that message is based on everything he discussed in the earlier chapters of Tanya, beginning with chapter 1. There he articulated how a person is to understand himself or herself, and how a person is to relate to his or her soul. This is the path, a direct and easy path, as he calls it, to reach the fulfillment of this mitzvah of Ahavta L'Reicha Kamecha. Let's learn inside. Zog da Alter Rebbe. Because since his body is despised and absolutely insignificant in his eyes, so therefore the perspectives and approaches of the body don't govern and dictate one's lives and attitudes if he follows this path of the Alter Rebbe. On the other hand, v'hanefesh v'haruach, as for the soul and the spirit, when he views life from the vantage point, not from the lenses of the body, but from the vantage point of his soul, then he can indeed truly learn to love, because when we talk about the soul and the spirit, miyedei agdulason umalason, b'sharshon umakeiron b'alekim chayim, who can know their greatness and excellence in their source and root, the living God? Who is the one who can judge and define the source and the true virtue and root of a soul's? So when you view life from the perspective and the vantage point of your soul, the distinctions, the variations of me being higher and he being lower, or converse, are totally non-existent. Bishagam, because the truth is shekul on masimis. They, all the souls, are actually all equal. Va'av echad lekulana, and they, all the souls, have one father. V'lachein, therefore, because of this, nikru kol Yisrael achim mamish. All the Jewish people are called brothers, mamish, in the full sense of the word. This is because of the common root of their souls in the one God. Because of this common root, the root of their souls in one God. So there is a oneness that characterizes them. So all Jewish are called brothers. Literal brothers. Rak, it's just only the bodies are distinct from each other. The bodies are indeed separated from each other. There is one body in this space and another body in another space, and it's two bodies, two people. But the souls, their souls are one and the same. Therefore, those who regard their bodies as primary and their souls as secondary, they cannot experience between themselves true love and fraternity, true love and brotherhood. They can only experience a love which is based on a specific cause. But true love, true brotherhood, can only come about if one regards his or her soul as primary and body as secondary. If it's converse, you cannot reach such a type of love. Because the body is distinct, and the body is what causes divisiveness. And therefore, the love is only that love which is based on a specific cause. This is what Alter Rebbe says. This is how he explains it. Interestingly, you're asking, what does avat luya bedavar mean? Avat luya bedavar is love based on a specific cause. Which is paraphrasing the famous Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, that there are two types of avos. There's an ava which is based, tluya bedavar, based on a specific cause, and an ava she'ena tluya bedavar. It's not based on a specific cause. Reviewing this chapter of Tanya earlier this week, I found that there's a Radbaz, one of the great commentators of the Rambam, who uses this language as well. In Hilchis Mamrim of the Rambam, Perek Beis Halacha Dalet, the Rambam discusses the fact that the Jewish Bezdin, the Jewish court, has the authority sometimes to instruct the Jewish people to be mevatel a certain mitzvah. Not to perform a certain mitzvah, or to perform a certain negative transgression, even though you were dealing with observant and religious Jews who would not do it otherwise. Zog de Rambam kadei lahachzir rabim ladas, oi lahatzil rabim Yisrael, mili kashal bedvarim acherim. In order for the sake of bringing back a very large population of the Jewish people to Torah life, or to save many people, many Jews, from falling prey to various negative situations. So if the Jewish court sees that this moment calls for a temporary, not eternal, a temporary change of the law, they have the authority. And the Rambam gives an example, just as a doctor sometimes amputates a hand, an arm, or a leg from a human being, in order that the entire human being should live. So the Radbaz writes that this metaphor of a doctor, of a physician, would not be justified only if anurayin es kol Yisrael ki'ilu em guf echad. If we view all the Jewish people as being one body, because although they're distinct bodies, since their souls have been molded and have been crafted in one place, so they are like one body, because the soul is the most integral and important component of human life, and their souls are one, so therefore the Jewish people are like one body. Thus the Rambam can give this metaphor: you cut off one arm, in God forbid, in order to save the entire body. But what is the explanation in this? What is the explanation in what Alter Rebbe is saying? They tell a story about one of the great Hasidic masters, who was the Rebbe Reb Melech of Luzhensk, who went on a journey known in those times as a Gullah's journey, an exile journey, where many pious Jews would wander around from city to city. They wouldn't sleep in one city more than a night in order to purify themselves spiritually. It was a common practice among certain types of Jews in Eastern Europe. And one of the great masters who performed this journey, they would go about in a concealed way, no one would know who they are and so forth, were the two brothers, Reb Melech of Luzhensk and the Rebbe Reb Zushav Anapoli. The two holy brothers. They were gone for a few years, and there are very many interesting stories told about their various journeys. Perhaps I shared with you once the episode of they once entered into an inn. It was a cold winter night, and they saw an oven. So they went on top of the oven to heat themselves. And close to midnight, a group of Cossacks, of Russian or Polish, Gentile, non-Jewish peasants, came in and began drinking vodka and whiskey and became intoxicated. And they began dancing. And their leader saw this Jew, the Rebbe Reb Zusha, was there right in front on top of the oven. So he said to himself and to his colleagues, let's whip this Jew. And out of fun, every time they would go around, they would whip Reb Zusha. And they were dancing around and around and around. And every time Reb Zusha was receiving very powerful whips, the poor Jew was weak and he couldn't do anything in the presence of such lowly, undomesticated peasants. After a while, the Rebbe Reb Melech turns to Reb Zusha and he says, my dear brother, you suffered enough. Let's exchange places. Reb Zusha said, my dear brother, but you'll get the klep. He says, it's fine. You got it enough. You come to my place. So Reb Zusha consented. And they exchanged places. The next time the leader of the group came around, he said, you know, guys, the poor guy is sitting in front. He got the klep. What about the guy in the back? Didn't get anything. It's time to give him. And they started to whip the one in the back. So the Rebbe Reb Zusha turns to the Melech and he says, I guess if you're the one who got to get it, you get it. If you're destined to get it, you get it. When Reb Melech came back from exile, he came into a city. A Jew ran over to him and said, how is your child feeling? Reb Melech said, I hope fine, with God's help. He said, you don't know what happened. What happened? He's very ill. So Reb Melech said, yeah, when, what? He tells him the story and he runs home. He runs home, he sees his wife. He says, my dear wife, tell me, how is our son doing? I think his name was Eliezer or so. She said, fine, Baruch Hashem, he's playing. He said, I heard he's very ill. She says, no, it's not our Eliezer. It's the other family's Eliezer. So Reb Melech was relieved. He says, oh, thank God, I'm so glad. And then he caught his head and he said, this is what my Golus accomplished. And he went back into Golus. But he was a very saintly and godly and holy person. What indeed is Alter Rebbe saying? The primary distinction he makes here is between relating to your body and relating to your soul. Between the guf and the nefesh. And from the context, it's obvious that when he talks about the guf, he doesn't only mean the physical body, he also means the animating force of the physical body, known to us by now well as the animal soul, the nefesh abahamas. And when he talks about the soul, he's talking about the spiritual, godly soul. The foundation of Tanya is, if someone asks you, what is the most fundamental theme of the Tanya, at least one of the most fundamental themes, is that we are not one-souled creatures, we are two-souled creatures. We consist of two components, two dynamics. The first is the body, and the biological consciousness that animates the body. The body has a motor called the nefesh abahamas, the animal soul that gives it life and grants it vitality. This soul is what makes us aware of our physical needs, the instruments for physical survival. The quest of this soul is to survive, to endure, to be comfortable. Its quest is that it should have what it needs to be and to exist. And this we call the animal soul, because in this dimension we are not too much different than any other animal. This makes us as part, this places us in the general zoological species that exists in our world. True, a more intelligent animal, but an animal nevertheless. I don't know, is there anyone here who has a dog? Whether you have or not, I'm sure you have been in homes, today especially, it's common with our dogs. I'm sure you saw a dog walking around the beautiful white carpet of a dining room or a living room. And you ever saw, sometimes the dog can be perceived, if you look at the dog, it seems that he is involved in a contemplative process. You ever saw the dog going around in circles, looking at the master, looking at the carpet, looking at the corner, looking at the master, looking at the carpet, looking at the corner? Basically, and I observed this not too long ago, there was a geschmacka piece of cheesecake or something in the corner of the room. The dog smelled it, observed it, and wanted to eat it, but it was illegal for the dog to eat it. It wasn't dog food, it wasn't healthy for it, whatever. And it was contemplating if it should go for it or not go for it. What do you think is going through the dog's mind at the moment? Is the dog thinking, is this noble? Would this constitute my purpose in life? Is this a meaningful act? Would this indeed be an expression of the true energy of the cosmos? To piddle or not to piddle, that is the question. What would happen if I would have been a cat? Should I maybe go into therapy? What can I do to become happier? Will that consumption really make me happier in the long run? This was my Gilgal thinking about it. You think any of this was part of the equation or the thought process of the dog? No. What was the dog thinking? can I get away with it? Or if I eat it, will I get a sweat with the newspaper from my master? Or another even more severe punishment? Or I can get away with it? Or similar needs that the dog needs. If it wants to use the rug for something else, it wants to know if it can get away with it or it's going to be punished. That's its calculation. Similar to that is our animal soul. True, our animal soul is more sophisticated. So part of its process and its structure is theater and music and poetry and ballet and philosophy and dreams and so on and so forth. The mind is more developed and more intelligent. But basically, the animal soul focuses on the self. Its question is, what is in this for me? What am I going to have from this, or what am I not going to have from this? That is its question. That's the bottom line. An animal is not evil, it's not bad, it's just selfish and self-contained for justified reasons it wants to exist. We all have that soul. Now, the Alter Rebbe says, if you want to have any peace of mind in your life, you have to get to know what you are about, your inner workings. If you reject or ignore or deny one element, it's not good, because you cannot live a life based on yourself and inner structure. So the first thing we have to know is that we all have that soul. That question of that soul is one question. And that is, where can I find myself in that picture? What am I going to gain out of it? How is this going to contribute to my gratification, to my comfort, to my happiness at this very moment? Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, the great founder of the Shita known as the Shita of Musar, of Jewish ethics, once overheard a Jew telling his friend, you know, I love chicken. So Rabbi Yisrael said, I'm sorry for intruding, but you don't love chicken. If you would have loved chickens, you wouldn't have slaughtered chickens. He was eating the geshmaka dinner of chicken, and he was saying how he loves it. He says, you wouldn't have slaughtered the chicken. You love yourself. And you love to eat chicken. You don't love the chicken. So this is true about our day-to-day existence and our day-to-day life. Now, this soul can love. If you're lovable, the dog will love you. If I can enjoy my life by loving you because you're a lovable type of person, like the chicken that he apparently loves, you'll love someone. If you're talented, if you're wise, if you're kind, if you're interesting, if you're charismatic, or whatever various virtues people possess, you're a likable person, you are an endearing person, I could love you. Certainly if you did good for me, I am indebted to you. Then I certainly love you. So this is a certain type of love and affection, and there is communication, and there is a relationship, and so forth. Zagdal Terebbe, that this is not real energy of love. This is called Ava HaKluya Bedavar. It's a love based on a specific cause. So when that cause is gone, the love is gone. And even when the cause is there, the love is limited based on the significance of that component in my life. What is motivating that love is a certain factor. Based on the significance of that factor in my life, that is what defines the nature, the magnitude, the scope of the love, and so forth. If we would only have this soul, life would be very simple. It would be pretty simple and straight and direct. The problem is, life becomes complicated because we're dichotomized and we have another soul. Beyond having an animal soul, we also have another soul he calls the Nefesh HaLekis, the transcendental soul. And this soul is diametrically opposed from the animal soul because its quest is to go beyond the ego, to transcend the parameters of self, and to connect with that which is absolute, which is eternal, which is true. This soul wants to be nullified. As I mentioned once, the question for this soul is a whole other type of question. To be or to be not is the question. The animal soul wants to be. The divine soul wants to be not. It wants to be absorbed, nullified in the all-pervading cosmic eye. It's not selfish, but it's selfless. It's not egotistical, but it's transcendental. When it has a question, should it go about a certain act? You know what its thought process is? Not what's in it for me. Whether this is going to be expressing ultimate meaning of life. That's its question. So therefore, the identity of this soul is not the I. At the core of the identity of the animal soul is the I and the pursuit of satiating the I. The search and the yearning and aspiration of this soul is to connect to the universal I. To connect to the true I. To go beyond the limited ego. It's selfless. And here is where a person is capable of true love. Someone related to me a few days ago a very moving story that occurred shortly after the conclusion of the Second World War. A large assembly of Jews found themselves before Pesach, I believe it was in Romania. I'm not sure, but I think it was in Romania. Perhaps Warsaw. One of those two places. The Skolene Rebbe was one of the Jews who was celebrating Pesach there. And through great effort and toil, he managed to get some flour for Pesach. And he got the wheat, and he supervised the grinding, the making of the flour, and the kneading of the flour, and finally the baking of the matzah. And he managed to assemble a small quantity of mahadrin, mina mahadrin matzah, the best kosher matzah shmura for Pesach. He notified the Jewish people present there that every leader, every rabbi, every sage, and so forth, he will give 3 matzahs. Every Jewish household, other Jewish households, he will give 1 matzah. In other words, people who were making more public zdarim, he would give 3, and every household he would give 1. The Vizhnitzer Rebbe was also in town. So the son of the Vizhnitzer Rebbe came to receive the matzahs for his father. So the Skolene Rebbe gave him 3 matzahs. When he gave him 3 matzahs, the Vizhnitzer Rebbe's son tells the Skolene Rebbe, "Can you please give me another 3 matzahs?" The Skolene Rebbe understood he wants it for the second night. He says, "I would love to, but I have so little matzahs here. I'm sorry." So the Vizhnitzer Rebbe's son says, "My father, the Vizhnitzer Rebbe, requested that I ask you to give him another 3 matzahs." He said, "I love your father. I would do anything for your father, but that means that other people won't have the matzahs. I'm sorry." The Vizhnitzer Rebbe's son repeats again. He says, "I know, but my father, the Vizhnitzer Rebbe, asked that you give another 3 matzahs." And the Skolene Rebbe again repeats his plea, "Please stop asking." The Vizhnitzer Rebbe's son repeats the request again and says, "I understand and I identify, but my father asked for 6 matzahs." Skelene Rebbe took another three matzahs and gave them to him. This occurred approximately 3 weeks before Pesach. Nope. Erev Pesach in the afternoon, several hours before the Seder, someone is knocking on the Skelene Rebbe's door. He opens the door, and it's the vision, it's a Rebbe's son, holding three matzahs. And he presents the three matzahs to the Skelene Rebbe. And he says, my father assumes that you don't have any matzahs left over for yourself. You gave out all the matzahs. Here are three matzahs for you. The Skelene Rebbe said, thank you for giving me matzah for Pesach. The reason he took six matzahs that day is he wanted three matzahs for the Skelene Rebbe Erev Pesach. The Rebbe once said, and these words are very precious to me because I heard them from the Rebbe during his last public address. The last Verbrengen he held was Shabbos Parshas Vayakel, Tov Shinun Beis, 1992. It was also Parshas Shkalim.